I'm always down to collab.
All right. Collab. I'm not that street. Oh my God. I think you're hipper. I can't work.
52.
We can't work. I'm not as hip.
Know what collab means?
Collab. I know what collab. All right.
Listen, hang out with teenagers and 20 somethings. It's natural that I pick up some of the vibe.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
We need to take some notes, clearly.
Okay. Hey everybody, it's Lance Dawson, who along with Andrew Stewart is the host of Backstage Lowdown, a podcast where we get to talk to performers and musicians, anybody who is a creator, and we get to go backstage, behind the scenes. We get to go a little deeper than the surface, figure out what they're doing, how they're doing, why they're doing it, and is that an original concept? Probably not. Do we have lots of fun doing it? We absolutely do. And do we have an incredible and an amazing, talented guest for you? Absolutely. Her name's Amanda Kind. Here we go. Backstage Lowdown. Hey, good morning, Amanda.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm super excited for so many reasons, but probably the most is I just haven't gotten to talk to you for so long.
Yeah, it feels like, I think it's been, almost a decade since we were in a songwriting group together that used to meet like in person, like back in the old days with guitars, sitting in a circle, trying to figure things out. Things have changed so much since then, but we were songwriting back in the day. It's been a long time for us.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the best. I missed that. I miss being around other songwriters and just kind of hearing what they're doing, you know?
Yeah. You definitely learn so much from collaborating and working with other people. You know, I think it's incredible how, you know, we influence each other as fellow artists.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just amazed. There were times where I remember from that going home, and I don't mean legitimately depressed when I say I was a little depressed, but I remember going home thinking, I just heard at least three songs tonight that should be on the radio. They're better than anything I'm listening to on the radio on the way home, and no one is ever going to get to hear them. And I didn't mean that like negatively, like these people aren't going to be successful. I just meant it takes forever and luck and commitment, all that stuff. I was just blown away by your talent and Sam's and, you know, Melissa, who I've started to call by her real name now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah, no, I think what we learn over the course of being musicians is that something being on the radio isn't necessarily a barometer of what, you know, what is out there. There's so much great music out there, and there's so many politics and factors that contribute to who is getting the most attention. And that's why I really love diving into playlists and discovering new artists. Like, there's a couple of artists right now who are sort of just in the early stages of getting discovered. You know, one of them is a country artist named Lydia Sutherland, and another one is a wonderful singer named Angel Baribeau, who are up and coming Canadian artists who have one or two songs that are starting to get a lot of attention, but I feel like the country doesn't necessarily know them yet, but they really should. And if you're like me and you love music, you know, I do a lot of listening to the top 40 pop charts. Don't get me wrong. I love me some good new Justin Bieber, but I also spend a lot of time digging down and trying to discover new songs. And I do a lot of sharing of those songs on my socials because I'm trying to get other artists to listen to these other people who are maybe not as well known. And I think it's important that we support each other in sharing new music so that more artists get discovered and we aren't just hearing the same 10 people on the radio.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And how are you coming across these different artists? Are you just surfing the internet looking for relatively unknown talent, or are you getting other singer-songwriters' recommendations?
It's a combination of that. Sometimes it's playlists. So yep. I look for things like Canadian indie playlists built by other people. I have my own playlists that I manage, you know, so I go scouring, or I read a lot of the indie music media. So like Canadian Beats is a huge sort of, you know, the place where lots of independent artists get featured, and they're maybe not as big as something like Exclaim magazine, but that's where sort of the people who are just starting out are getting featured. And so awesome. I actively read those articles and listen to those songs and try to decide for myself what's awesome, because I think it's important for me to kind of have a good handle on who's creating music and how music is sort of shifting, and because we all seem to think that there's only this much Canadian music happening, and I'm physically making a very small circle with my hands. If you're not
for those listening,
that's
for
right.
those listening. But there's such a vast majority, like there's an infinite space of people creating new music in Canada, and the pandemic really showed that to me, because I started to tap into all these songwriting groups that were existing online and connecting people across the country. And I've met, like, I want to say hundreds of musicians over the last year who I never knew existed. I've discovered music I would never have discovered otherwise. And I feel like I'm tuned into some new sounds and new voices that I never would have known. And it's exciting and awesome.
That is exciting. And you brought up a few good points. Number one, that I love the fact that being on the radio is not an accurate barometer of being a successful artist or being an artist of good quality. So that was brilliant. And then secondly, just the fact that there's just so much, there's almost a tsunami right now. So in some ways that's great. Like you said, there's so much Canadian content. In other ways, it's really hard because you can get lost in.
Totally. I don't know if you're aware of this, but like DistroKid is the biggest place where people get their music distributed to iTunes and Apple Music and Amazon. And I read an article recently to say that there's 60,000 new songs every day being put out. So Imagine trying to get seen if there's 60,000 new songs coming out every single day across the world. It's crazy, but it's also incredible, because we used to live in a world when I was growing up, you had to have a label in order to get music out there. And now if you want to create music, like I'm constantly working with young artists, if they write a song and they get it produced and they want to distribute it themselves, they can do that. And it doesn't cost too terribly much. There's ways for you to get your music out there it's an easier kind of way to get your music out there than ever before. It's just that because that path is so much easier, there's so many more people doing it. So it's a little bit harder to get seen in the landscape.
Right.
So you've just dropped a new single.
Yeah.
When you talk about choosing a producer, how did you go about choosing the producer to work with for the single?
That's a great question. You know, I'm friends with a lot of different producers, so it's a tricky, it's a tricky thing. Some people like to work with the same person all the time. I don't generally do that. I might work with someone for a few songs and then work with another person for another song. In this particular case, I had an idea for this particular song that came out, which was pretty personal to me and very singer-songwriter based and very much emotionally charged. And Sam Hilfer is somebody I've known for 10 years. Lance and I met him at the same time in that songwriting group. And I know that Sam has this special ability to draw out emotional songs. You know, the stuff that he produces is really, he does a great job of taking the vocal and the lyrics and creating this entire soundscape around them that supports that emotional idea. And so for me, there was really only one option, and I wanted Sam. Also, I wanted to co-write with someone, and Sam's also a terrific songwriter. And I wanted to work with someone who was going to be really sensitive to my emotional needs on the song. And because I know Sam really well, I just knew that he was going to listen. Because when you're working with someone and collaborating with them, you need someone who is going to give as much as they take. And Sam is someone who is an incredible listener. And for me, the idea of working with someone who was going to listen and help cultivate and have no ego about the process, which I would say Sam really cares about the artist feeling great about things. That's his number one priority. And I know all those things about him. And it's funny, because the moment we started writing together, I knew within about an hour that I had picked the right person.
Yeah, Sam is fantastic. You're absolutely right. So it's really a team, like when you have this idea for the song
it's a fully team effort. Like we wrote together, we talked about sounds together, and we did a lot of it over Zoom because we started writing in person before the pandemic started, but the pandemic sort of kicked kicked in about a month after. And so we did a lot of what we've done being in separate spaces. And it's just incredible the way that Zoom has created this virtual experience without needing to be in the same room. I mean, right now I'm in a different province than you guys and we're having a convo.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I want to ask, like, was that harder? Because there's a lot of times just being in person. I don't know. There's something about that, particularly in writing, right? Where you can kind of...
I think I would have said that a year ago, but because I've done so much online songwriting over the last, 14 months, I don't notice a difference anymore. In fact, there's a huge convenience about me being in my space with my piano right beside me and my lyrics on a Google Doc shared with people. Right. And so I'm talking on Zoom as if we're in the same room, but because I'm not in a different space, like if we all have to convene in one space, that space is usually the comfort space for one person out of four. Right. Now everybody's in their comfortable space with the tools that they need in order to do their best writing. And, we're able to be there together. And sometimes if I want to work out an idea and I need to tune out the room for a second, I just turn off my video and mute my sound and I work out an idea for a second and then I can come back into the room. So there's so many benefits to being in a virtual space that just never occurred to me before. You have the advantage of both privacy and this communal feeling at the same time.
Right, right. Amanda, I want to try something we haven't done on the podcast yet, but we're going to be talking a lot about this amazing song. And I'm just going to try to see if I can get this going through I did the best I could. Maybe less than I should have done better. I lie awake because I need you, I need you. I never thought after all that we've been through that you'd say we can't go back. I don't want to live like that. I lose my mind because I miss you, I miss you. I never thought I would do this without you. Every memory cuts so deep. I thought it would get easier. Wow.
It's always hard for me to listen to myself sing. It's so funny. Like every other musician, I have vocal dysmorphia. I listen to myself sing and I'm like, ooh, I don't know.
Oh no, not you. You can't do that. I got to tell you, man, I've heard your songs before and they're really good, but that was really well done. Really well done. For so many reasons. I don't want to just placate you and say, oh, great song, Amanda. It's raw. For those who do get to listen to this podcast, I'm going to encourage you because we only have Amanda for probably 50 minutes, et cetera. So I'm going to encourage everybody to check out her Facebook page. She does a full hour talking with Sam. So you get to meet him too, where they really break down the process of creating Easier, the name of the single, and what they did, how they did it, why they did it, how personal of an experience this was for Amanda. And, I want to talk to you about the process as well, because there's not the process. There's multiple ways to write a song.
There is no right way. And that's what's interesting. Right. Yeah. In most art, there is no right way. Whether you're painting or creating theater or writing songs, there are established practices that people like to follow. But I can tell you some of the best work is done by breaking the rules.
Right. Right. And so, so it's the process, not...
Yeah.
Can go anyway, but anyway, so I listened. I've both Andrew and I have listened to this song, I think, multiple times, not together, but I think we've just talked about it briefly. Naked, really naked, like fantastic naked.
And I would say it's naked in a emotional way and in a vocal way, like it's really exposed. And so we did a lot of work trying to make that create that feeling, but it's also a complicated thing to do when you're not applying too many processes on the vocal. Like you really have to record it right the first time. Like the actual real audio for it doesn't have too many effects on it. So I would love to say that I sang it three times and then we got a perfect vocal. That would be a full-blown lie. I sang it 30 times at least.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
But still has a very thick sound to it.
Yeah, well, there's lots of layers, so we like often something we do in pop music is layer the lead vocal. So double it so that it sounds thicker in the chorus. So we did do that.
Okay,
right. I just like the fact that, and people are going to have to listen to the whole song, but the idea of, when someone leaves or something ends and it's not a death, it's just somebody purposely chooses to leave, then they both parties have to pick up pieces And ultimately, I it's arguable, I guess, but the person who didn't decide to break up the entity has maybe a few more pieces to pick up. So what I liked about this was, and I guess I have the benefit of having listened to your conversation with Sam, and I know Steve Lehman, who did the string section to this. I just like it when I say that it's naked. What I'm saying is that at the start, it sounds like it's just you and your piano picking up some pieces.
Correct.
As the song gets deeper, or it gets deeper into the song and it gets more emotional and maybe more painful, there are things that are happening that make you, the singer, more insulated. You start to surround yourself by strings and more sounds so that you can get through this. And then at the very end, it starts to retract those things and just get more and more naked at the end again. And I just love that. I think it works with what you wrote. I think it worked with what you felt. And I'm, you know what? It was great. And I don't think anyone can listen to that song without thinking of Lady Gaga or a movie or a Broadway play. Certainly A Star Is Born. Like it's that.
Lance,
powerful.
You're laying it on thick. I'm blessed.
No. I'm not trying to, again, I'm not trying to placate, because we got to write 100 crap songs before we get to one that's real and taps into it.
Okay. So and repeat that again again for every listener, because that is what I keep telling my students. You have to write 100 bad songs, I would characterize to say there's no bad songs. You just have to write 100 songs that don't really fully grasp what you needed to get to something that really feels like it lands.
Yeah. No, you do. And that doesn't even count the editing of the one song that you decide to keep. And right. If you're a little masochistic like me, I record the bad ones so that anytime I start thinking, hey man, you're pretty good at this, I can go back. And I can listen to any of them like, oh, no.
Listen, I have like 700 voice notes of song ideas. And I would say 2% of them get turned into a full song.
Yeah.
Right? Like we have to come up with all these little hooks and ideas just to see which ones might be worth fleshing out.
No, I agree. Do you ever listen to a song and they'll have a line in the song and you think, that's a great hook. Why wouldn't they write the song around that? Oh, I'll do that.
Sure.
But it's just there.
Lots of times I listen to music and it inspires me to think of something else.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, by the way, while we're just talking about lines, Andrew, you can jump in here because I know you listened to the Facebook interview with Sam as well. Yeah. But the line that, I just played it too. And what's the line, Amanda? You took three lines, ideas, you put them together. Grammatically, they don't make sense. They don't have to, but emotionally it was great. I should have done better.
Yeah, I did the best I could.
Right.
Maybe less than I should have done better.
Exactly.
I love that though.
Oh yeah. 100% it works.
And at the time we were like, is that nuts? Or is that stupid? And then I sang it a bunch of times. We were like, actually, maybe that's kind of exactly what it feels like, which
is nuts,
two
and
things
that's why
at
it works.
Once. Mm-hmm. So guys, I'm going to unplug my earphones, plug in my iPad because I'm losing power like crazy. Can you still hear me if I'm talking like this?
Yeah, I can.
Perfect. Yeah. Great.
That could be Andrew's deodorant. It knocks out power everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
Oh,
there.
I didn't.
Oh, you're not even
supposed to put on
today.
Deodorant before the show?
I don't know. I meant didn't... to tell you I was trying Axe deodorant. So if you're really attracted to me today, Andrew, I just, you know, saying it's the
That's
Axe.
Why
I've seen
I might be running over and knocking
talk
down your
axe.
Door.
Yeah.
Let's do a sidebar for a second and talk about
okay, with your sidebar.
Are you a 16-year-old boy? Is that what?
I teach a lot of teenagers, and I got to tell you, nobody teaches these boys to spray and walk through. You know, this is the standard way of putting on smells. Like if you're going to wear perfume or cologne, you spray 2 times high and low and you walk through.
And you walk through.
Please don't spray it on your body. We don't want you to marinate an axe. I don't need to smell that. So PSA to every boy out there, please do not marinate in your colognes.
Double spray.
There you go.
Walk through.
There's a PSA. And that cuts both ways to
it
girls
does,
with
actually.
Perfume.
Yeah. Spray and walk through.
Yeah. I'm kind of a soap guy myself, but with my sons, I've always said, you know what? Just put a little bit on your knee.
There's nothing worse than walking beside someone and getting knocked over with the cologne and being like, what? Who thinks that that's attractive?
Yeah.
Get away.
Yeah, no, I hear you. You know what, Amanda, I can bring this back to music, because I just think when somebody's got that much perfume or cologne on, I'm like, what are you trying to hide?
Right.
And that's exactly what I think sometimes when I see these concerts and there's explosions and dancers and snakes and stuff. I'm like, wow, your song must really suck. Because you're just look over here.
I've grown to appreciate the big concert production experience, yeah, as much as I appreciate the piano and a singer on their own. I went, the last concert I saw before the pandemic hit was Celine Dion. And I got to tell you, she's 50 something and her voice was so exceptional and exquisite. I was there with five friends and we just kept looking at each other like, is that real? Did she just sing that after singing X? I don't think I've ever heard a singer sing that many difficult songs back to back while like changing costumes, strutting the stage, being funny and charismatic. Celine Dion just does not get enough props. She is an incredible artist.
Wow. Yeah, no, I could see that. But isn't there something, if she's just sort of, I'm not diminishing it. She's walking around, as you said, and being entertaining. And obviously she's got enough like in her catalog, we know how great she is, but you know, you're listening to her. And that's what's so amazing. I have a hard time when somebody's doing backflips on some sort of suspended trapeze and still hitting high notes. I don't buy it. I can't see.
Well, I'm going to counter and say that I saw Pink in concert and I could hear her breathing while she was turning in the air. And so because I teach singing and I know how that sounds, I'm pretty sure she was singing.
Yeah. Well, and I like Pink. Honestly, I think she's another one that is kind of the real deal, but
like when I saw her live, some of her high notes were hit by her backup singers. And I exactly. didn't regret her
right.
because she's in the air flipping. So, right.
you know. Lance, the next show that I go out and see of yours, I expect you to bring your A game.
Okay.
And I want to see some down? Backflips.
Yeah.
Twists.
Hard to do
I am a non-backflips artist, sadly. I am a microphone. Yeah. If you see me standing in front of a microphone, you know, that's probably as close as it's going to get.
There's no dancing. There's no
dancer friends though.
Oh, okay. There's no sashaying and around the microphone or anything.
There's no sashays. There's no jetés. There's no jazz crosses.
I'm not.
Just want to go back to easier here. Just because it's such a personal song. It isn't written with a song group. It isn't just from an idea. It's from a personal experience.
Yeah.
Now I could see this song just being left to the listener to enjoy and feel that emotion, but it's very much a song that I can see being performed on stage. It's still a very theatrical song, but would you have difficulty doing this song night after night as a performer?
That's a great question. It's funny because I feel like writing the song actually helped me process the situation more than I could have without the song. And in the early stages of writing it, I can tell you that when we wrote When You Grieve Someone Who's Still Alive, like I cried in the studio. It was really hard for me. But the more I did it, the easier it was for me to get through the song. And when I recorded the vocals at home, and I wouldn't generally do that, but I kind of didn't feel like I could get through it many times in the studio. So I took breaks. So I recorded it a bunch of times at home. And now the more that I listen to it and the more that I sing through it, the stronger I feel about it. And so I feel like if I went to sing it on stage, I probably would be okay. I might have something catch in my throat at certain points, but it's amazing how much music helps us process all these feelings. But yeah, part of the experience here has been that it was a form of therapy for me to write the song. And it has done me a lot of good to sort of allow that situation to be what it is and to try and move on.
That makes sense. I know you talked a lot of, it is a form of therapy, right? Like playing the piano, playing the guitar, the writing, it is all selfishly just therapy. So you felt like after you wrote the song, and let's face it, a long time to sort of write the song, get it right. How many times do we sing it and edit it before it gets recorded? I mean, that's just forced pain and therapy, right?
Yeah. And I think some songs you can knock out in 3 hours with a group or on your own and they're fine. And some songs take months, and this song took months, and it was important for me to take the time and get all the words right. Because in my case, I was really tapping into something that was unique to me. and that I wanted to also feel universal. So I tried not to personalize, you know, specific scenarios in the song, but try to capture specific feelings. And I hope that we did that. And now that it's out there, I feel proud of A, having a song out after a decade of being away. And I feel proud of the fact that it's helped me process the grief that I felt about that scenario.
Yeah. No, and it's such a, it's a bit of a universal thing. Like, I think anybody who listens to this can relate to it on some level, right? Which I thought was really, really important. Let's talk about the process for just a second. Cause there's, like you said, some songs fall out of you in half an hour. Like there's songs that I've written sometimes and I think this can't be a good song. That was way, that was just way too easy. Right.
Sometimes great songs come out in a flash. They really do. And I don't think there's any one right way. It's we can't just say the song and quickly it's not the best, because sometimes, like, I would say Easier was a crawl to the finish line because we had a different chorus. We actually ended up writing the song, taking a break from it, coming back to it and completely gutting the chorus and rewriting it. And it's a better song for that. But I, you know, that process doesn't necessarily apply to every song. I have a country song coming out. I'm guesting on a country song with James Downham, who's a great country artist from Stratford, and his that song comes out next Friday. And there were four of us that worked on that in a virtual songwriting group. And that song came together in maybe 3 or 4 hours. And I think it's a great song. I'm really proud of it. It really emotionally speaks to me as well. And it was a totally different process. So I can't say that there's one good way to do it, because that process was significantly more streamlined and ended up being such a great experience for me, because I never expected to cut the song. We were writing it for James and I thought he was going to maybe cut it with another female country artist. And he ended up saying, I think you should cut it with me. And I was like, and I don't sing country. And he's like, it doesn't matter, you know? And now I've done an alt pop song at the beginning of July, and now I'm doing new country at the end of July. And because I have no expectations for myself, I have this wonderful freedom of saying, I'm doing whatever feels good these days. And if people like it, awesome. And if they don't, that's great too. It's all, sure. I'm all doing it just to be happy.
Well, you've crossed a lot of genres. Like, you can also go when people go to the Facebook page to listen to the interview with Sam, also check out Wonderwall, because you do an amazing jazz version of that. I mean, I know that's old. It's old, but you did a while.
It still gets quite a few plays for me, which I find fascinating. I think people love that 90s music, and we do a stripped back version of Wonderwall that's like very slow jazz. And Jason White, who's the piano player on it, you know, does some really cool piano things with it. And it's 6 years old, but it's still in rotation on some jazz playlists and some jazz radio stations. And I you know, I'm proud of that little jump into jazz for a second.
You did a great job. You did a great job. I love that. So, oh boy. And it was fun working with Sam. He's a good dude.
Sam is an exceptional guy and a great producer. And one of the number one things I love about him is that he just cares about getting the final product to be something that everybody loves. And if that takes longer than what would normally be expected, I think Sam's okay with that. Sam is someone who really is in tune with feelings and energies. And, you know, I'm somebody that is very fussy about vocal things. Like, you don't want to have me as a client and not care about very detailed work as a singer. I'm someone who's listening to the mix saying, this note at this second is flat, and I need you to go in and check it and make sure it's in the center of the pitch. And he'll go in there and go, yep, it was like a quarter tone flat. I was like, I heard it.
I think it's somebody that you want to have on your album saying, hey, Amanda, do you mind listening to this just before we master it? So,
and he's always like, he's like, I don't barely hear that tuning, but if it bothers you, I'm like, I can't put that out. Change it.
Let's get back to, so tell me about, you and Sam had talked about, eventually I'm going to have Sam on this too, just so, because we're talking about
Sam would be a great guest.
Steve Lehman too. Steve's great. Anyway, you guys had talked about cognitive behavioral therapy, which I thought was really cool. Yeah. I thought, you know, obviously it's it's open and it's personal, but we've already talked about music being a type of therapy. So how can connect those for us?
Well, I am somebody who's done a lot of cognitive behavioral therapy. I think it's important for everybody to explore their feelings and to have an omni look at why they behave in a certain way. And Sam has done a lot of CBT too. So it's a language that we both kind of understand, which is like examining why we feel the way that we feel and like looking at core beliefs about yourself and wondering why you're feeling like, for example, if you're angry, are you really angry or is it something that's more related to being hurt? And the response to the hurt is the anger. And so being able to delve down many layers into emotions changes your songwriting because you're looking at it from such a layered level. And we also just read emotional cues so differently because we're versed in this language that those kind of therapies use. And so we're a lot more gentle with each other, I would say. And, you know, if Sam's having an off day or I'm having an off day, we can read each other pretty well. So we might be on a call writing something and he can tell that I've had a long day and it's not really flowing. And he's not going to push me to try and get it to happen. We'll just stop it there and come back later. Or he'll say, you've said this, and it kind of makes me feel like you might mean that this was a painful part of the whatever. Like, let's talk about that scenario for a second. So we might talk about the individual experience, and then I might start using words. And Sam is brilliant at taking me barfing out a paragraph of a situation and saying, here are the three words that stick out to me as grabbing the essence of what you just said.
Right.
And then we build a line around that. So I think there are benefits to being really in tune with your own emotions and thoughts and feelings that drive a songwriting process in a different way.
I would agree. And then finding, as you have just said about Sam, is finding another person that can read you appropriately, even when you might feel like, no, I want to do this. I want to write this song. We got to get this done. And it's really like having a spouse in some ways that knows to say, you know, let's just step down or step away from it today. And, you know,
and I'm really lucky, Lance. I have like many work partners that like I work with Steve doing this thing that we have called KW Glee, this show choir, and he and I are like yin and yang to each other. We both bring different skills, and so we, you know, he's really good at reading me and I'm really good at reading him after 10 years. And so oftentimes we do exactly that, which is we know when the other person needs something else and we're kind of stepping in to fill those gaps. And I've been really lucky that I have lots of working relationships with people where we've worked together for long enough that we really understand each other's flow and energy and needs. And we do the best we can to fill those gaps for each other and step in when something isn't, you know, when somebody needs support. And there's absolutely nothing that I do in my life that I do on my own. I have the most incredible support network and friends and colleagues and fellow musicians. You know, this release, Easier, would not be here without my network. I've got the people who worked on it are incredible people. And, you know, I think I really value the fact that I've somehow been blessed to meet incredible people who want to play with me in the sandbox and who complement my skills, like in areas like I don't hear half the things that Sam hears in a track or that Steve hears. And so sometimes I might bump a track over to Steve that Sam and I are working on and say, do you hear anything? And he'll be like, yeah, I would say that this is maybe a little high, you know, the alto harmony feels a little high to me and I didn't hear that. And then I go back and listen and go, oh yeah, I can see that. So we just need our friends. And I think there's a narrative out there in the young musician circle that I often hear, which is like, I got to do it all myself. If I'm not a true artist, unless I do every single piece of the pie myself. And I don't really subscribe to that. I think we got to use our network and work together and collaborate. I think you get great product when you work together.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you're honing in on another thing that you had said in the thing with Sam is if you're really focused, if you're song centric, meaning that at the end of the day, this is about really producing a great song, then you have to give up some creative control and let somebody else have some input, right? Because once we let it go, it's done. It's out of our hands, whether people like it or not. So this is really the only chance you've got.
Well, and you want to hope that you're working with a collaborator that listens to you when you say to their idea, not feeling that. right?
Right.
Because there are times, like in writing groups, when we're working, there's a lot of ideas that I throw out that don't get chosen, and you have to kind of come into those collaborations with very little ego, because what serves the song should be the thing that makes it on the page, right? Yeah. And so you have to throw out 100 ideas to get to the two that are awesome and that work. And sometimes someone else says something and that particular idea doesn't get used. But because they said that, it triggers an idea for somebody else. And so if you hadn't said idea A that didn't get chosen, idea B would never have come into fruition. So there's this exchanging of ideas that helps. And I use the idea of kernels, like popcorn. You're throwing the kernels in and they start popping and you start grabbing all the good stuff. And before you know it, you have this collaboration where you're not sure who came up with what words.
Right. I think you just have to, and I always say to people too, if you're in the room, like this is a really good thing about not being offended that your idea didn't get used, because I always feel like you kind of need ego to at a certain point to sort of get the job done. But all you need to do is be in the room. And then after that, you don't need to be upset about your idea not getting used. Because if you're in the room, if I'm in a room with Amanda Kind and Sam Hilfer and Steve Lehman, then wow, how fortunate am I? Like these are three people that don't suffer fools lightly. And you know what I mean? So I think that's all part of it. I want to tell you, by the way, you said how fortunate I am and lucky and blessed, you said, to have all these great people. That doesn't happen without some reciprocity. So I think all those people would say the same about you, which I would. So I think, you know, you can't just be like, oh, I'm just so blessed. You know, they're going to say the same thing about you and your talent and all the kids. I didn't even bring up KW Glee yet. How many kids have you and Steve Lehman got into music and performing that never would have thought about it?
You know, now it's in the hundreds, which is exciting. And it's, you know, the joy of being 10 years into that project is that now we're seeing kids like are, you know, doing their own music. Like one of our alumni is Delaney Jane, the EDM artist who has the number 11 pop song in Canada right now. Wow. And, you know, Elliot Jacob has, you know, was in the band Safe as Houses, and his stuff is climbing the charts as well. And there's just a ton of alumni now who are creating their own music and putting it out there. And so while I'm on my own songwriting journey, I've also got Proud Mama Syndrome going on. And I'm constantly sharing their stuff because I'm just so excited to have been a little tiny part of creating who these little artists are. And I shouldn't say little, like in some cases they're big and they have unbelievable creative ideas. And, you know, we're a little tiny piece of their journey. And it's so cool to watch them grow up and like go after it in their own way.
Yeah. Wow. So what I know, obviously this last year has derailed everything, including probably KW Glee. So is that going to get back on track in the next
year? Yeah, I would assume so. You know, part of me at the beginning, when we were taken sort of stopped and had to shut down, I was pretty devastated. You know, that was a huge part of my life. And I don't have my own kids. And so those kids are like my kids.
Right.
And so being away from my kids was painful. Now, that being said, once I had time to process that wasn't going to happen for a while, it's the thing that made space for me to create as an artist myself. So now I look back with huge gratitude and say, this pause from that was important for me. And it was essential for me to get back to creating music for myself, because I had spent all my creative energy helping other artists. And I didn't really know it, but in the back of my mind, I was feeling pretty burnt out and depleted. And I really wanted to create my own music, but I didn't really have the time. And so the pandemic forced me to do that self-reflection and say, you know what? What's going to happen when we come out of this pandemic? Do you want to come out and say that you were sad about all the things you lost? Or do you want to figure out what you can do during this time that will satisfy some other things that you maybe haven't had time for? And that's when I started reaching out and joining these virtual songwriting groups and saying, okay, if I can't be with the kids and I can't coach as much as I did in person, and I can't do what I did before, I can do this. And I can tell you, it took me out of my sad, depressed, missing the arts state and put me into, like, I don't know how else to describe it, but like an electric artistic alignment for a second. And I was like, okay, I'm going to release new music. And I don't care that I'm 40, I'm 41 now, but like, I honestly, you get to the point where you hit midlife. And I love this Brene Brown quote. I love Brene Brown, who's an author and a therapist. Midlife is the time when the universe grabs you by the shoulders and says, I'm not effing around, use your gifts. Right. And that's what happened to me. I kind of got hit with this. If I don't practice what I preach, which is go after your dreams, don't listen to people who don't tell you don't have it, you know, because lots of kids are afraid of being in music because the whole world tells us that being in the arts is a losing battle. You know, I've spent a decade telling other artists to tell the naysayers to take a hike and just go for it. And I wasn't doing that personally. And I am a huge, integrity and authenticity are like two huge pillars of who I am as a person. And so for me to realize that I wasn't really living my truth or living up to those words was a big thing to face. And now that I've done some writing and releasing, I feel more creatively in tune and better as a coach than I've ever been. And I'm a lot more fearless than I was. Like, I just feel like it was an important move for me to say, you know, forget anybody else's judgment. I really don't care. If people want to laugh at me for putting out music at 41, let them. I'm doing what makes me feel happy. And if other people love it, that's great. But essentially, at the core, I'm doing it for me.
Sure. Is that a thing? I know the industry is youth obsessed. It always has been.
Yes.
I remember.
Industry, everything is youth. Everything entertainment based is youth obsessed. Yeah. I think that's changing a little bit, but I definitely had huge trepidation. Like, I would say Glee started when I was 30 and I just released an album at 31 and my studio took off and Glee took off and I just had no time to sort of chase the album. So the album got put out and I kind of dropped it and was coaching. And then by the time I hit 34, I was really missing music, but I felt like I was too old and it was too late and I wasted my chance. And then I sat on that feeling for 6 years. That's the regret in that mix, you know?
Sure. And you know, but you can't, regret's one of those things where you don't want to stay too long there because it's kind of useless, right? Here's the thing.
Well, I love that. Okay. That Adele lyric, regrets and mistakes are memories made. I have it as a pillow on my bed. It's an Adele lyric. And it sums up a lot of things for me. You're like, regrets and mistakes are memories made. And it's true. I have lots of great memories, but I'm also so grateful to have walked back to my artist self because I think it's an essential part of who I am. And it informs who I am as a teacher.
Sure. Don't you find though that you're almost better now? Like, I don't know that you... And I've known you for a long time. I don't know that you would have been capable, if you went through a breakup in your 20s, I don't think easier would have been made. I don't know that you could have tapped into that at 25 and the industry would be like, oh, Amanda, you're great. You're 25 and everything. I find that it's just the most unfortunate thing that everybody's so youth obsessed because now, and I've got 10 years on you, I find that in my songwriting, I actually finally feel confident enough, and it is a sense of confidence, to have something worth saying.
Totally.
That has some substance to it. And I did a song with Sam a couple years ago called Skippin' Stones. And I played that song. So it was written by a late 40s, early 50s guy. And I played that for a 14-year-old girl, an athlete that I was working with at the time. And I said, hey, and she came in. She was like, you know what? I like country music. I'm like, oh, good for you. And she goes, play me something country. I'm like, okay, well, this is sort of alt country. It's not straight ahead. And she goes, well, I'm pretty picky. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I played it. I didn't tell her it was me. And she said, I give that maybe a 4. I'm like, like out of 5 or she goes, no, out of 10. I'm like, so now this is awesome. Right. I'm just like, this is great. Cause you get so tired of your friends listening to your stuff saying, oh, that's fantastic. Cause you're never as good as they say you are. You're never as bad. So anyway, I'm thinking this is great. This Amanda, you're going to love this. Cause I know you work with so many youth. I said, why don't you like it? And she said, well, for 2 reasons. I can't dance to it and it doesn't make me cry. So what the hell am I going to do with that song? And I was like,
you know what? Right. You got to love.
Well, you're not, I didn't write it for somebody who's 14, but somebody who was 40, that when the 40-year-olds listen to it, they're like, oh, I get that. Right. So
that's so interesting you should say that because the country duet that we have coming out, I would say is very much focused toward like people who have some experience in life. And so I can't imagine that too many, you know, teenagers are going to connect with it. But James and I, while we were writing with our team, you know, it's not for the 15-year-olds of the world. Taylor Swift writes music for them.
Right.
You know, yeah. I, you know, this is music. This duet is about couples who band together during challenging times and make it work, even though they have so many things, so many hardships to work through. And somebody as a teenager can't really connect to that narrative because they haven't lived it yet. And we just need more avenues for music that speaks to all stages of life, for sure.
I completely agree. I keep saying when people say, well, why are you still playing in a band at 50? And I'm like, because there's got to be, maybe there's not, I just believe there's got to be a space for somebody of every decade to have a voice and to sing about things that matter, you know, later at life. And, you know,
and then there's those rare songs that come out of young people. Like I mentioned Lydia Sutherland earlier, but she's 22 and has a Nashville deal, I'm pretty sure, but she has a song called Love Me out right now. And it speaks to me so much. It's so universal. And I look at that songwriting and go, how did a 22-year-old come up with this unbelievable hook for a song?
Yeah.
You know, so like at any stage of life, we can create things that have universal appeal, but sometimes there are songs that speak to a certain segment of life. And I think that's okay too.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of a catch 22. When you're young, you don't seem to have the fear. You don't maybe have the judgment to say, oh, that's garbage. I can't write that. I can't release that. They just do it. And sometimes it's brilliant. And maybe as you get older, you develop certain crutches or fears, or, you know, you lose that. And then you get to a certain point too. It's like, wow, I finally have some depth and something to say worth hearing maybe. And so I don't know.
Well, that's why there's that famous quote, youth is wasted on the young.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we're like fearless and ready to take on life when we have no life experience. And then we get life experience and we're nervous and trepidatious about grabbing our dreams. It's amazing.
So let's say I'm a 16-year-old boy. And coming into KW Glee, and coming into KW Glee, what is the experience that I should be expecting?
How are you going to grow there? Well, it's different than any other choir because it's got a physical component. So there's dance involved. And sometimes the guys that come in are a little trepidatious about that, but it's great physical exercise once a week. And when you're singing, it's kind of like being able to do your own cover of the chart hits. Like when we do a song, like if, for example, we haven't done this song yet, but if we ever did Hold On by Justin Bieber, I mean, we're doing full throttle choreography and like some guy's got a microphone and he's belting it out and there's a full band behind him and lights. And so if you're interested in doing what artists are doing on stage in mega rock concerts, we're replicating that experience on a smaller scale. But we're also coaching you in music, like music theory and like some of those basics, vocal health and singing and how to be a better singer. So you're getting like musical and dance training, but you're also getting this amazing energy and vibe of being like, what, pre-pandemic, we sold out every show. So that means you're stepping on a stage in front of 600 people and dancing and singing your face off, and people are cheering. Like we have fans that would buy tickets that don't have kids in the show. I would have to give the kids like a speech about not adding strangers on social media. Yeah. Cause we'd had some issues and it's like, you kind of get a following and you kind of get to live that rock star experience for a second, which is fun. Plus you get to do it with kids who all love music and are from different areas of the city. So because we're not one high school, we have kids from Guelph, Kitchener, Wellesley, Waterloo, London, Hamilton. So it's KW Glee, but we really should think about changing the name because kids are coming from pretty far away and it's a rock experience, a rock, pop, rock. So you're really, you know, we've gotten to the point where there's a new lighting look for every number and like different costumes. And when I say costumes, we make the kids buy their own clothes so they look like themselves. We just kind of give them a guide as to what to wear. And I think the kids have a blast. Like, it's just fun. It's like karaoke, but like on a scale of 100.
Nice.
No,
Lance over, can you teach him how to do a backflip?
I can't do a backflip, but I'm happy to call my KW Glee choreographer, Christine Watson, and she can teach him how to do it.
Nice.
Yeah, that's, you know, why don't you go and try out for that stuff? Come on, Amanda's got it. She'd have more work.
Let's see.
No, I'll take some vocal lessons from her.
Needs is a 48-year-old man.
You know what? There's an idea though. I think that I get upset sometimes when cities keep building playgrounds only for kids when I see people growing like older. We need to still play, right?
As well, our bodies and move. People
and I would
been,
love a KW Glee for like 40 and 50 year olds, because I know a lot of, I work with a lot of musicians that are, you know, they're 40, 50 year old people. They just play their guitar or their piano at home. And part of them would love to just say they were on stage, not forever, but just on stage. And there's no opportunity.
Well, and it's funny you should say that, because we get lots of inquiries about adult programs that are similar to what we do. And it's something, you know, that we've considered before. It is tricky, though, because adults, I don't know how much time they would be willing to commit. I can tell you the Glee kids work 7 hours a week.
Right.
They work so hard. They do 4 hours of vocal every Saturday, and they do 3 hours of choreography every Monday. So when people come and see the show and they think it's incredible, I kind of have to remind them that it is like 70 hours plus worth of rehearsal. You know, those kids work harder than any kids I know.
Yeah,
plus,
it's a huge
most
commitment.
Of them get amazing marks and have side jobs. Like when people give me speeches, and I hear this sometimes in my life about, you know, teenagers today and how lazy they are, my eyes bug out of my head, and I want to say, are you crazy? Because every kid that I know that's a teenager is in the most incredibly hardworking child I've ever met.
Right. And then if you have that constant message in your face all the time that somehow you're not delivering like other generations.
Right.
I've had that conversation with my two sons where they just feel like they're not millennials. I don't know what they call them, but they're
Gen Z.
Sure. And Gen Zs are less than really right. Across the board. Right. So,
but they are the most, you know, we have a shift in schools. You know, we went from teaching people how to write cursive and making them memorize spelling to telling them how to be creative problem solvers and helping them create, like come up with ideas and, you know, germinate them and help them to come to fruition. And so, yes, we have a generation of kids who maybe aren't the best spellers, but they can run their own business. And right. There are huge benefits to the way that education has changed. And the kids that I meet are some of the most entrepreneurial, creative, smart. Like I never worry about the future, because every generation, every next kid I meet, I'm like this kid could run the world, or that kid, or that kid, or that kid.
Right.
There's a ton.
They have a sense of altruism that I don't think my generation had too. So that part's there. I kind of do worry though. I'm not sure their attention span's going to be long enough for the open heart surgery, Amanda. Like just, it's one thing to be on stage learning lyrics, but if they've got to perform an open heart surgery for longer than, I don't know, Call of Duty lasts, we're in trouble.
They're going to invent, for that. Don't worry.
They're going to invent a machine that does it in 15 minutes.
Exactly.
You're probably right. Amanda, I'm going to tell you one thing. I could probably talk to you all day. There are some times where people's names just happen to work out, and I've always found you very kind. And I really appreciate you being here. I'm hoping that when you get back from BC, you and I can go grab a coffee and really
I would love
up.
That. I'd love to meet Andrew too. Come on, let's.
I'll come along.
Honestly, it's not that great. He's okay.
Whoa, dude.
Like,
cool. I've only known Amanda for an hour,
okay.
And you're already taking knocks at me.
Listen, Lance, I'm all about making new friends, so I'm gonna say he's got to be there.
Yeah.
I think you can do better.
Maybe we forget about Lance. Maybe that's what needs to happen.
I know. No, you know what? I only tease the people I like. And so unfortunately, I really like Andrew. He gets teased a lot.
Well, people ask me about whether my name is fake a lot. Like even when I'm at a store and they like, I look at my credit card, it's super funny, but I am in fact a kind and a born kind. And because of that, I have spent my life trying to live up to it.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Okay. So look, you've listened to other episodes of our podcast, unlike anyone else in the universe. We finish with a speed round, and the speed round is simply a bunch of questions that we give you the answers to, like, hey, Amanda, shoes or boots? And you'd say
highly
boots.
Unscientific.
Yeah, highly unscientific, but it's a very fast and inaccurate way for us to get to know
Let's
you
go.
A little bit further. All right, Andrew, speed round, you're on.
Performing your own music on stage or coaching others to perform?
Oh, tie.
Oh, okay.
Tie, you can't do it.
You gotta pick one. Just pick one.
I don't follow the rules. You just talk to me for an hour. I'm not a
Alanis Morissette or Lady Gaga?
I'm going to be rogue here and say Gaga.
To have lost love or never loved before?
Lost love.
Jazz or pop?
Pop.
Playing piano or sing?
Sing.
Margarita or wine?
Oof, margarita.
Messy or tidy?
Messy. Always messy.
Stay in bed all day or get up at the crack of dawn?
Oh, bed all day.
Nice. Massey Hall or ACC?
Massey Hall.
And finally, vinyl or digital?
Digital. I'm not precious about my vinyl. Give me the best quality digital track. I'm all for it.
Well, that's our 10 questions.
This is not a voice that should be compressed, though. I'm going to say that. If you get to listen to Amanda's voice, I don't want that compressed to some sort of MP3 thing. So I think anybody that listens to this today, I honestly and sincerely, I want you to do, well, I guess one thing is to go on to Amanda's Facebook page, and I want you to download, pay the dollar, support the arts, but download.
Or just stream it on Spotify or Apple.
I bought mine on iTunes.
Yep.
On iTunes.
I bought mine on iTunes. I'm waiting for the concert. I think that
I'm waiting for the live version.
Yeah.
Here's an exclusive for you. The video is shooting in August for Easier, and it will come out sometime in September.
Oh, really? Ooh, mm-hmm. Cool. Have you cast for that yet?
I have, and I've cast an incredible contemporary dancer and some other things. Like, it's going to be incredible.
Oh, there's dancing? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to audition to be the guy. I wanted to be the guy. I was going to audition. Yeah. But I didn't know I had to dance.
Yeah.
I thought I just had to be
the guy.
I'm not the guy.
Lance is not.
I knew my
guy.
Dancing was going to hold me back.
Nice.
Damn it. You know what? The problem is I never connect with the girl that I'm dancing with because I'm too busy counting in my head. One, two, three.
I would be too.
Yeah.
Not the best dancer over here.
Okay. Well, look, if it falls through and you need somebody, just, you know, call me.
I know who to call.
Okay. Well, thanks, Amanda.
It's been great meeting you and getting to chat over this past hour. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. And, you know, I'm amazed that my iPad is held up this long.
We think your iPad is
downloading. We're downloading Easier, everybody. And once you fall in love with the song, go back to the Facebook page, watch the conversation with Amanda and Sam Hilfer. They are two of the kindest and most talented people that I know. And you'll get some insight, even more so than we got into today, about how to write and record a great song. Amanda, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, guys.
Thanks for listening.
Stage low down.